Along topic, item number 21, the Cowlitz River update, this briefing and public input. And Cindy, good to see you again. Hey, George.
Thank you. I don't think we'll be as long as the agenda says because we've kind of switched some things up a little bit. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commission members, Director Unsworth. I'm Cindy LaFleur. I'm the Region 5 Fish Program Manager. To my right is Eric Kinney. He's the Hatchery Systems Manager for the Fish Program. And I wanted to mention that Keith Underwood with Tacoma Power is in the audience as well today. We're going to talk to you today about the Cowlitz, and it's listed as a briefing, and that's because we have to be brief. There's just a lot of stuff we could talk about in the Cowlitz. There's a lot going on, and so I'm just going to, I just wanted to let you know, I'm just going to touch on some of the things today. We'll go over a background overview of the basin and some of the management guideline agreements that we have in place. We'll talk about hatcheries, monitoring fisheries, some recent events, and then a summary. Oh, here's a map of the basin. I'm going to point out a couple things here. Here's our two hatcheries. Mayfield Dam is the first one, and then going upstream, Mossy Rock Dam. Let me see. Mayfield Dam was built in 1962. Mossy Rock Dam in 1968, and Cowlitz Falls Dam in 1994. Cowlitz Falls Dam is operated by Lewis County PUD, and the other ones are operated by Tacoma Power. These three dams are all hydroelectric dams, and then we have the barrier dam, which isn't really showing on here, but it's just right below the salmon hatchery. The Cowlitz enters the Columbia River at River Mile 68 near Longview, and it has about 2,500 square miles in the entire basin. That does include the Cowieman River and the Tootle River, which are tributaries of the Cowlitz. I'm trying to see what... historically... this basin produced a lot of fish. The records indicate in about 1948 it was estimated about 244,000 adult salmon and steelhead were produced in this basin.
Do those dams you were showing have fish passage?
There is... so there's adult, help me out here.
So the way this is structured is it's a trap and haul program. So everything is trap and haul around the facilities and hauled above Cowlitz Falls Dam.
So it's a trap and haul up and trap and haul down.
Yeah, okay, that's the upper one.
Yeah, above the Cowlitz Falls Dam into the system.
That's where most of the adults are put upstream. We also put adults upstream of Mayfield into the Tilton, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as we move up. We have juvenile collection at Mayfield and Cowlitz Falls right now.
Okay, so you haul them both places. Okay, thank you.
So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, sorry.
Yeah, the whoosh, do you do that?
No whoosh here.
Is that used anywhere?
We utilize that on the Washougal right now. It's also been tested in some other locations.
We need a video of that. Another video.
We can provide that.
Yeah.
So the FERC license is needed to operate the dams, and Tacoma, I mentioned Tacoma Power operates the dams and is also responsible for funding the hatcheries, the monitoring activities, most of them, passage and facilities and operation. The initial agreements focused on mitigation hatchery production, and then since there's been some changes, there's a settlement agreement that is, the original one, again, was driven by mitigation to replace fish production due to the lost habitat when the dams were built. And that is what resulted in the building of our two hatcheries on the river. The initial mitigation goal was just based on adults returning to Mayfield Dam. The current settlement agreement was redone around the early 2000s with the new FERC license, and it's driven by ESA requirements. We also have a biological opinion that reinforces the provisions of the settlement agreement. So it provides the same mitigation goal for lost habitat is included in this one as well. This one does have a more focus on conservation, recovery, and passage, but an important thing to remember is that it does include the importance of maintaining sustainable fisheries and hatchery production. The current settlement agreement established the Fisheries Technical Committee, I'll talk about that in a minute, and also required the development of a fisheries and hatchery management plan, which I will as well talk about. The Fisheries and Hatchery Management Plan is the FHMP. There's already been two plans completed, one in 2004 and one in 2011. They're effective for 6 years, so we're in the process through the FTC, the Fisheries Technical Committee, of writing or updating that plan. The plan must contribute to recovery and conservation of ESA-listed species. And in those ESA-listed species in the cowlitz, we have spring chinook, fall chinook, coho, and winter steelhead. And it also must provide fish for production in sustainable fisheries. We're in the process of updating this. The deadline or the goal is that it's to be completed by July 31. And the focus is reintroduction into the upper basin. The Fisheries Technical Committee is made up of the seven parties that were signatories to the settlement agreement. And those parties are Tacoma Power, National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Ecology, Yakima Nation, Trout Unlimited, which represents the conservation groups, and WDFW. And the purpose of the FTC is to provide recommendations regarding actions to maximize the effectiveness of fisheries mitigation, protection, and enhancement measures. The group meets once a month and just works on various technical issues within the basin. It covers the gamut. We have an advisory group that we call the Cowlitz Ad Hoc Group. It was developed when the previous FHMP was being updated, the one that was completed in 2011. And the group currently provides input to the department for working on the current FHMP update. It includes people interested in the Cowlitz Basin, and it involves a lot of different interest groups. We've got members from organized sport fishing groups and unorganized groups, or that's not the right way to say that. I meant members of the public. We have ocean fishing interests as part of the group, and we have participants from both the upper basin and the lower basin. So it's a wide, diverse group. And in recent years, that group of constituents has met with the fisheries technical group, and that's what this picture shows, which I think has been very helpful for for both groups to understand the concerns of the others. So the Upper Cowlitz Basin goals and objectives, you know, and includes reintroducing native stock salmon and steelhead into the upper basin, coho, winter steelhead, and spring and fall Chinook. So reintroduction began really in about 1994 above Cowlitz Falls, where we were putting winter steelhead, spring Chinook, and coho, and then there's fish have been put into the Tilton, which is in the first reservoir. Since the beginning, since the 1960s, but the focus now has shifted to the recovery of the native populations. But it's also important to remember that one of the objectives is to recover the populations to healthy and harvestable numbers, and that's also part of the overall Lower Columbia Recovery Plan, and then to develop and maintain sustainable fisheries. This is a picture of Cowlitz Falls Dam. It's the upper dam. We had juvenile fish collection beginning, I think, in about 1996. And this right here is the fish facility. There's a fish collector here, but the fish passage, when we got the new settlement agreement, it required stricter fish passage survival past this, and because the standards weren't being met, there's been a new collector built right in here. Pretty impressive operation. It is complete now, and they're in the shakedown testing phases. It's expected to be operational very soon, and the expectation is that it will increase the fish passage survival significantly. Currently, we're at about 50% for steelhead and coho and pretty low on Chinook, about less than 10%. And so that's what's currently limiting our recovery efforts in the upper basin. Here's pictures. I'm moving on to hatcheries. The trout hatchery on the left and the salmon hatchery on the right. The trout hatchery, or salmon hatchery, is just right at the barrier dam, and about 6 miles downstream is the trout hatchery. They were built in about 1968. And these are the current program, current recent program sizes in the basin for the different species that are produced at those two facilities. And so this totals up to 8.9 million. So it's a lot of fish that get produced in the Cowlitz. And you can see it's also a wide variety of species. Over here it shows the types of programs that are in there. And so we have these three, fall Chinook, coho, and winter steelhead, that are integrated. And we have segregated parts of it, but integrated means we're collecting wild brood and integrating those with the hatchery fish. That's part of the whole reintroduction recovery efforts in the basin. These program sizes are matched with our natural origin population sizes, and that helps us determine how many of the hatchery fish we can meet, because we want them to be compatible with our wild fish. Mayfield net pens are in place just above Mayfield Dam, and they were built in 2014. There's 20 different net pet, 20 different pens in here, and it, right now we're raising about 2 million fall Chinook in those. They're then trucked downstream below the salmon hatchery and released. And through our new FHMP process, we're talking about potentially using them for other species besides fall Chinook. We do a lot of monitoring in the Cowlitz Basin, and it's pretty exciting because we're learning and gathering a lot of information on our natural origin populations. That's critical so that we can keep our hatchery programs in place and producing hatchery fish for harvest. So we do adult monitoring for all the species, Chinook, coho, and steelhead abundance. We get total abundance, we get hatchery origin and natural origin proportions from that. We recover tags and gather biological information. We do krill surveys for various species where we could get both hatchery catch and natural origin fish that are released. We sample tributary weirs, sample at the hatchery for the hatchery broodstock, collecting age composition and tag data, and we collect natural origin fish for broodstock, fall Chinook and winter steelhead, and then there's some monitoring that goes on at the Cowlitz Falls Fish Facility. We do have a smolt trap in the lower river, and most of the funding is provided by Tacoma Power. This is just one example here. This are a couple pictures of some fall Chinook monitoring. The lower or the left picture is a jet sled that we use, sampled several days a week, collect biological information, genetic samples from the fish. For this particular system, we also use a helicopter to get the red counts of the Chinook. We do similar things for spring Chinook in the basin as well, but coho and winter steelhead, the efforts there for monitoring are focused in the tributaries themselves. As I mentioned, there's a rotary screw smolt trap in the lower river. It's been in place for about 2 years, collects genetic samples from Chinook and just monitors the migration of the juveniles in the system. Also gives us information on hatchery out-migration. This is one of the four tributary weirs that we have in the lower Cowlitz. Both of these pictures are the Olaquah weir. They're in place in four tributaries. Primary purpose is to control PHAS, and PHAS is the proportion of hatchery origin spawners on hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds. We remove hatchery origin fish at the weir, and then that helps us get estimates of other areas. It controls it. We get abundance estimates. We do some mark recapture, and it's where we collect broodstock for our wild steelhead program, take wild steelhead at these weirs and then take them up to the hatcheries. And one of the key things for fisheries and with these is that it gives us information on steelhead, hatchery steelhead, and the rate at which they stray into the natural origin areas. So this is critical information that we use to allow us to recycle summer steelhead on the Cowlitz, which is very popular with the anglers. We also have, we use these weirs for coho as well. They're in place, and so we get information there. And then I just wanted to mention Tacoma Power funds this, but we also get, it's a joint funding effort, we get Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead Endorsement Funds to help support this effort for managing these weirs. I mentioned that we collect wild broodstock. So for winter steelhead, we collect broodstock at these weirs and at the Barrier Dam adult collection facility. coho's collected at the barrier dam, and then fall Chinook are collected by participating anglers and staff. This picture is of a fish collection tube that we give to the anglers that are helping us. They'll put the fish in there, and then we'll come and collect them. You're able to transport the fish to, as long as you keep this in the water, until you can collect it. So I'm going to move into fisheries next, and you know, our monitoring allows us to have fisheries because it provides us with the information we need to know what our population status is. And the Cowlitz Basin is a high priority for recovery. One of the focus populations is Spring Chinook. The National Marine Fisheries Service has said that the Cowlitz and Lewis basins are necessary to recover Spring Chinook in the Lower Columbia ESU. So it's very critical there. The Cowlitz River is a very popular and productive sport fishery, and the hatchery fish in the basin provide fish for harvest, not only in the Cowlitz, but in the sport, commercial, and tribal fisheries in the Columbia River and along the Washington coast. And we recognize that these are very important fisheries, you know, because they provide opportunity, they provide harvest, and we're talking about a really wide range of fishing interests that not only in the Cowlitz, but outside the Cowlitz.
Since Spring Chinook is one of the targeted fish for recovery in the system, how come we don't have an integrated hatchery for that species?
Good question. I believe that we are, so the focus for Spring Chinook recovery is in the upper basin above Cowlitz Falls. And we've been waiting for the new collector to come online because the fish collection survival hasn't been where it needs to be. So now that that's coming online, we expect that we'll have better passage survival, and we will be implementing that program into the future. Is that accurate?
Yep.
So this graph is contribution to fisheries of Cowlitz Hatchery Falls Chinook. You're not going to be able to see a lot of it. Look at this as sort of a general view. This is looking at brood years 2005 to 7. Just a couple things to point out. One is there's a lot of different fisheries that these fish contribute to. Number two is some of these big pieces of pie, this one here in sort of this orange, is Washington Coastal Sport Fisheries. It's a big piece of that pie. The other one is this purple one, which is Washington Coastal Commercial and Treaty Fisheries. And then the other biggest piece here is the Canadian Fisheries. So these two combined pieces of pie makes up about 42% for Washington coastal fisheries. So it's, you can see how important it is for those fisheries. Now in this graph, the terminal fisheries is this really skinny one, and it's not showing up very well. And I think probably more because of the magnitude of some of these other ones, as well as the fact that this is based on coda wire tags. So you have to have the coda wire tags recovered in order to expand that out. But I'll show you some pictures of fisheries inside the Cowlitz itself. This same graph, this is coho, different brood years, 2008 to 2010. And again, see this big piece of the pie here? That's Washington Coastal Sport Fisheries, critical and important to those fisheries. This one here is the tributaries, so that's primarily the Cowlitz. And the other biggest one is Oregon Coastal Fisheries, that big green piece. But it goes from Alaska, including the Columbia River, all the way down the coast. And it probably includes California, but the numbers are probably too small. So before I move into fisheries within the Cowlitz River, I wanted to just talk about a couple of things. As I was putting this together, I realized that the sport fishery in the Cowlitz is open 365 days for salmon and steelhead. We divide it up into our own little chunks of spring Chinook and fall Chinook, but it's always open, and it's always open for those species year-round. So that's pretty cool. Not all of our Columbia River tributaries we can say that with, although we try to do that. It's a very popular fishery, and you'll see some pictures that show you that. One of the ways that you measure, you know, economic benefit, I guess, is through angler trips. I'm not able to provide you with angler trips because we need the intensive creel to do that, but we've done little bits and pieces, and I guess I would estimate from some of the numbers I've looked at that the angler trips are likely in the several hundred thousand, 100 to 200,000 annually. It's significant. And then I'm going to show you some graphs of fishery harvest in the Cowlitz, but I want to point out those are only for the lower Cowlitz. It's below the barrier dam. We do have fisheries that occur in the upper Cowlitz as we've been putting these hatchery fish upstream. So there's a lot of interest in the upper basin as well, but I'm not going to show you those graphs today. And then maybe just one more thing. We do have opportunity for tuples in the Cowlitz during certain times. So first is I'm going to move through, I guess, what I kind of see as the seasons. Starting with winter steelhead, got 5 years of harvest on these fish. The season that we kind of matches with our catch record card is November through April. We currently have 3 fish steelhead bags in the lower Columbia. The average harvest here is 11,000. I don't know what else to say. Next is spring Chinook. Mistake on this graph. The season really goes through July. 2 fish bag limit, and the average harvest is 3,600. You can see it kind of ranges from a 2,000 to around 5,300. Summer steelhead, you should have gotten a new graph on this one in your packet. Variable during these years, it was just under 10,000. We had a low year here, bumped up to just over 15,000, and then in 15, it was about 27,000. This average right here is 12,500. And the season, again, it's open year-round, but the season that we call summer steelhead is May through October. Fall Chinook harvest ranges from around 2,200 up to 5,000 during this time frame. This average is 3,700. Not sure what else there. Coho, it's a different scale. Around 2,500, I'm thinking, up to over 20,000 in 2014. That was our big coho year. This average is 9,500. This does include adults and jack coho. I mentioned it's a very popular fishery. This picture here on the upper left is near the salmon hatch, just below the salmon hatchery. And it's pretty popular for bank fishing. There's access there for bank anglers. You can see quite a few there. This one's a little bit dark, but this is the other major access area at the trout hatchery, the Blue Creek boat launch. I think this was in the spring about a year ago, but these are all vehicles parked in here. Anybody who's ever fished there can tell you how popular that is. Well, this one down in the bottom, these are 2 of our Americans with Disability Act access sites for ADA anglers. This one is at the barrier dam. These are little fishing pods that provide bank access. And then here's one at the Blue Creek boat launch. This one at Blue Creek is pretty unique in the state, and it's actually only for folks in wheelchairs right now. These are both two of the popular fishing spots. I'm going to turn it over to Eric, and then I'll summarize.
So this part of the presentation will cover the fish losses production for the 2016 release year of summer steelhead and cutthroat trout in the Cowlitz. The release goals for summer run steelhead were 625,900, and for cutthroat trout they were 90,600 in 2016. The total release for those two stocks combined was only 202,000, I think 200, it's a little over 202,000. The split was 183,600 summer run steelhead and 18,600 cutthroat. A root cause analysis was conducted by WDFW and Tacoma staff, and the analysis identified some actions to be put in place so this didn't happen in the future. And I'll get into some of the reasons for this and maybe some of the uncertainty as well. At the Cowlitz trout hatchery, steelhead and cutthroat are reared in 5-acre lakes, and 3 5-acre lakes and 1 2.5-acre lake. The 5-acre lakes are 450 yards by 50 yards wide, and they're partially netted. The center portion of them are currently unnetted, although we're doing some innovative things to try and cover some of those things, but I'll get into that in a little bit. In 2016, fish were only reared in 2 of the 5-acre lakes due to some damage to one of the 5-acre lakes in the previous rearing year in 2015. Repairs were being conducted, being completed during that 2016 rearing time frame, and so this increased the density in the 2 5-acre lakes that were being used, which made it potentially easier for predators to get to fish. The existing infrastructure limits the ability to fully net the 5-acre lakes, but this will be addressed in the facility remodel, which is being scheduled, or it's on schedule. One of the other issues is how the fish are numerated when they are released. We currently use a multi-tube fish counter, and this is two sets of counters that are set up in a common rearing release channel, and all the fish from all 4 of the lakes go through these counters. And so all the production from both late winter steelhead, summer steelhead, and cutthroat trout all have to go through these counters. So this means we can't differentiate as they go through the counters on what stock is being released at the time. So that's what contributed to kind of an unknown of what stock was lost during this rearing time in 2016. These counters are not the most accurate method, but it's the only method we have right now on the Cowlitz. Tacoma Power in the past has spent upwards of $300,000 several years ago to investigate a better counting system, but was unsuccessful. Little new information I found out just this morning is the counters, and I'll get into this a little bit later too, but the counters were sent back to the manufacturer, and we're still waiting for the report from the manufacturer, but it's thought that the batteries were low, is my understanding, and Keith may talk to this in a little bit at the end here, but the batteries may have been low and not counting fish, so our shortage may not be as short as what we counted out of the facility. So we're going to be waiting for that report. So in the root cause analysis was conducted and included, you know, increased bird predation was a cause, ineffective bird hazing techniques, fish counter uncertainty, which I just mentioned, and then possible disease and environmental issues. Unfortunately, masking effects from predation make it difficult to quantify each one of these factors. Additionally, hatchery infrastructure does not provide for the means to inventory fish until they are released in these ponds. This makes it extremely difficult to adaptively manage in season. These lakes are, you know, 450 yards long and 50 yards wide. They're very difficult to determine how many fish are in there during the season. And if the the mortality or if we have some low-level disease in those ponds, the birds pick those out before we even have a chance to even figure out what it is. Tacoma Power is working with the department staff and hatchery design experts to explore a variety of options to meet current and future production challenges. The remodel project is in its early stages and expected to be completed in the next 3 to 6 years. So some of the completed actions that we've taken already to try and address some of the predation issues. A smaller mesh netting was installed in to deter predators from entering the covered areas. So the 5 acre lakes, the both ends of the 5 acre lakes are covered, completely covered. And then there's some nets that go down through the water column to keep ducks and other things from diving in. So we changed the size of that net so the ducks couldn't get in through there. We increased the hazing contract to all daylight hours, and the fish counter was sent back to manufacturer for recalibration. Last time it was done was in 2014, but with recent information that I just found out this morning, I think we're going to figure out what happened in the previous year for the release. The department is also testing the use of high visibility fishing line. Suspended across the open areas of the ponds to try and determine if that's going to keep some of the birds out, and it seems to be working fairly well with the exception of trapping a few birds which have been released. Tacoma has ordered shoreline nets to deter blue herons, and so these are going to be placed along the edge of the shore because the herons sit on the edge of the ponds and just pick fish off as they're swimming by, and so this will prevent those herons from doing that because they don't like to swim. They won't be able to stand along the shore. The first nets are scheduled to arrive next week. The rest of the nets will arrive in the next 10 to 14 days. Tacoma Power is also working to secure a lethal hazing contract with USDA, which USDA is the current agency that does the hazing project right now. WFW and Tacoma staff are exploring methods to estimate in-season production numbers. We're looking at potential options of using pit tags to pit tag some of the fish in there and have readers around the edge of the pond to see if we're losing fish in season. Summer steelhead from the 2016 release group will return in 2018 and 19, and the cutthroat are expected to return this year for the fisheries. So it's really not certain on how many adults return from this release. Favorable ocean conditions could still produce an average return year. And with the new information that we just got and still researching on the counters, we may have actually released more fish than what was counted with the counters at the time.
So to summarize, the Cowlitz River Basin is unique. You know, there's vast challenges. You heard about some. We're trying to reintroduce fish into the upper basin. We're trying to get passage survival figured out. It's high profile and numerous fisheries. It's a very popular fishery. We have large hatchery programs, over just under 9 million. There's significant funding for hatchery production, monitoring, and passage. There's significant funding or resources coming in because of all of the fisheries as well. There's intensive monitoring and a large potential for wild fish. Monitoring is providing us with a lot of valuable information to aid in those efforts. And we have strong partnerships with Tacoma Power, Lewis County PUD, and the other parties to the settlement agreement.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tacoma Power. Questions? It's a cute picture.
There was one where you were, and there again, I'm not trying to be critical, but it just blew me away when you were telling me on your juvenile, catching your juveniles, you were losing half of them and 90% on a coho. Was that right? Or on the Chinook?
You're talking about the passage survival.
Yes.
Yes, the collection at the upper facility. Yes. I can't talk a lot about that. I have somebody in the audience who could, but the new collector and these some of these things for Steelhead and Coho, I think, have been improving, so we're figuring things out, and that's part of the reason for the new collector that's been built in the tune of
It just blew me away, because in my part of the world they catch them by the hundreds of thousands at the Snake River Dam, so I would think that a person could, I guess I'm just, it just blew me away. Is that so? But it's being addressed?
Yes. Okay. Yes, with the new collector. It'll be tested.
Okay.
We have Keith Underwood here from Tacoma. You want to come up and say a few things and talk a little bit about the program down there?
With regard to the collector, so it was quite a challenge to try to figure out how to collect fish up in the upper Columbia, or the upper Cowlitz. And one of the reasons is that in the Columbia, when we want to pass fish, we add spill or do things that add flow. If we were to do that, we would just spill fish into Rife Lake and they get stranded there. So what we had to do is figure out a system that would collect fish in a run-of-river type of scenario. And we found some examples in the Columbia, like Rocky Reach, where we tried to emulate. And so we had experts that we debated the solution for about 10 years on what the right solution was. And we've finally implemented that. And this is probably the most state-of-the-art collector in that it has many, many alterations that can be done to it, because we described all these challenges. And so we can alter flows, we can change the geometry of the opening, we can do a whole host of different things, and we've written an adaptive management plan around all that. So we our goal is to collect 95% of the fish moving downstream. That's going to be quite a challenge, and we're not going to be doing it next year because we need to learn and adapt this collector, but we should be moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Keith. There's a
yeah. Could you, Keith? Could you please tell us a little bit about the plans to remodel the trout hatchery, and also I know a frustration I hear from a lot of sportsmen, and it's directed at my staff and me, and also to Tacoma. People feel like it takes forever to make things happen on the Cowlitz sometimes, and I'll own part of that if it's ours, but I want to talk about why does it seem to feel like it takes so long to do stuff on the Cowlitz at times?
Yes, sure. So we remodeled the salmon hatchery about 10 years ago and put a lot of energy into that. I think every aspect of that facility got remodeled. And then we moved into trying to fix the Cowlitz collector, and we put a lot of energy into that. And we have finite staff, so our energy's moved into that. And as you may well also know, that the Cushman license is a part of Tacoma, and we've just built two new fish hatcheries, upstream and downstream collectors. So we had a lot of resources being spent on all these different projects, for which the trout hatchery was the victim. So we knew we had an aging infrastructure at the trout hatchery, but we had these higher priority facilities, and the trout hatchery was is doing all right. And then just recently, we've had some real difficult problems, for which a lot of it's coming from an aged infrastructure. It's a 49-year-old trout facility, and recognizing that we had these problems, I did secure $8 million worth of capital funds in our capital budgeting process last year in working towards solving the problems at the trout hatchery. But there are vast number of issues within the trout hatchery, and we're trying to do a comprehensive solution. So I have HDR engineering right now under contract, where we're writing a master plan for which we will have a comprehensive solution. And so over this last year, we've really been struggling with what kind of solutions can we do now where we're not stranding significant resources into a pond that we may reconfigure. So, for example, for us just to net the ponds and fix that, we need to build a bunch of structure in order to hold those nets. And these nets are huge. I mean, acres of nets, okay? We're talking $500,000 for a net. And that's not counting the engineering or the structures that would have to hold them. So we've been trying to be disciplined in our approach so that that money could go into true solutions of the hatchery and not just a quick fix. So we've been, you've seen some of the quick fix stuff where we're trying to do monofilament. We're trying to figure out how to improve the, understand what the 5-acre ponds will look like into the future. We may need to break them down into smaller ponds. And as soon as possible, and get that on a fast track to solve that in the next year or two. That's not highest priority for us. But there's also issues like the hydraulic grade, where we may have to change the whole operation of the hatchery. So it sounds like a bunch of excuses, but it's really not. It's recognizing we've got a complex problem, and we're trying to find the solution. We're behind the eight ball. We should have probably been doing this a number of years ago, because the facility is failing faster than we can react to it right now, and we're doing our best to do so. So that's pretty much the slowdown. Once we get a good plan moving forward, things will move much quicker towards solutions.
When do you anticipate having a final plan done?
We're working towards a final plan by June of this year, yes.
Has anybody ever done an economic analysis of what releasing $9 million Salmonids into that system brings back to the state in revenue from recreational and commercial fishing activities?
Tacoma hasn't been involved in those studies, but others may have. I don't know if there's others.
Somebody should.
Yeah.
Somebody should. Because $8 million isn't very much. And you start looking at the reduction in opportunity that this is caused to the citizens of the state, who frankly are the ones who are paying for it anyway. So.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment, too, that I appreciate the issues and the difficulties with these capital improvements, and it does take longer than you think. And some of us that we like to armchair quarterback things at times, and it just seems so simple. And it isn't simple. It's very difficult. But I do appreciate the movement you're making and your commitment to improving this fishery into the future. And we have these kind of problems across the state. We have hatchery issues. We have 83 hatcheries in Washington. And probably the majority of them have these same kind of capital problems, one form or another. And so it's a big issue. We were at a tribal meeting last week. The tribes have identified hatcheries and hatchery production as a big issue for all of us, and I couldn't agree more. We're going to do a comprehensive review this summer. I want to push the envelope on production. I get the parts on the hatchery and genetic management plans and the issues involved there, but I want to make sure that we're pushing the envelope everywhere we can to produce some fish and have some fisheries, and I think the cowlitz is a place we ought to be doing that. That ought to be a priority. It's one of the prize fisheries in Washington, and I fish it quite a bit myself, and the number of people on that river from the mouth to the barrier dam on any given day when things are happening is unbelievable, and we need to keep that machine going because it's an economic driver for the area. So thanks for your effort. Anything we can do to make things happen in the interim, I appreciate that. And let's work together to make it happen on the cowlitz.
Thank you.
I think a quick question. Are you far enough along in the planning to know whether you're going to have the hatchery fully offline for a while or portions of it? Will there be a decrease in production during the revisions?
We haven't done the capital implementation plan yet, but our goal would be not to reduce any production. We would try to find solutions for that, if it would be to move to net pens or other solutions in the interim.
Thank you. This is a public input also, and we do have a number of people that wish to provide input. Some of you may be new to the process, so 3 minutes, you'll hear the buzzer go off, wind up your thoughts quickly. That's how much time you get. I'm going to call you up two at a time. Greg King and Larry Price, please. Kick her off, Greg.
Good morning, Commissioners. Director Unsworth. I read the summary on the that's on the Cowlitz River here that staff put out, and I read the summary, and I've asked where are the day-to-day and week-to-week and monthly reports on this hatchery operation. We all know that a good operation will have these reports, but because of the lack of transparency within the WDFW, these reports are not being shown in said summary. If we had these reports, we could show the root cause of these fish loss. There have been several theories thrown around by WDFW: disease, bird predation, lack of bird netting, and faulty fish counters. Also, we know for years that the ozone pump at Blue Creek Hatchery is in miserable condition. It is not, if not monitored correct and water is run over these eggs, they could lose 30 to 40% of the said eggs due to Ceratomyxa shasta disease, or mostly commonly known as C. shasta disease. Many of the sports community believe that this is the root cause of fish loss. Plus, there's no way birds can eat over 500,000 fish without somebody seeing or reporting it to hatchery management. Plus, if bird netting was the problem, why wasn't Tacoma notified that said problem resolved? We also believe that without proper maintenance of the fish counters, there would not have been a problem. But we highly doubt that this was a problem with the fish counters. Plus, why, when the fish loss was found out, why didn't WDFW go to other hatcheries within the Columbia River basement and recruit surplus eggs from these hatcheries? But that's the problem with WDFW. Never a straight answer, but every excuse in the world. So my question to you is, how many fish have we lost over the years in this hatchery and we're not being told about? Plus, Friends of the Cowlitz lost our net pens that we had, and we raised 100,000 summer on steelhead. That would have alleviated quite a bit from this loss of fish that we had here. And I'd like to know why we lost those net pens. I believe it was due to nymphs saying that these fish were spawning in front of the net pens, and they're not. They're going back up to the hatchery. And, you know, it would have alleviated quite a bit of this impact from these fish. And yes, I agree that an economic study needs to be done on that. And like I said before, Jim Scott said that these fish were worth $1,000 economically to the local communities. So here's 2017. How much are those fish really worth today? We need to do that economic impact study on this river, because these communities are losing out on these fish. And Southwest Washington is small town communities, and we can't afford this stuff, you know. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And Steve Nelson, please. And Larry, that's you.
Yeah, so my name's Larry Pryor. I'm here from Yakima. I've been a long member of the Friends of the Cowlitz, of which currently I've been recruited to be the vice president of Friends of Cowlitz, and Don Glazier is the current president of Friends of the Cowlitz. Little history of Friends of the Cowlitz. You know, this is an issue that's a little troubling for the Friends of the Cowlitz because they have a long-term relationship with the department of rearing net pen fish, of doing tributary introductions of wild fish, and that they want to see the Cowlitz River develop and become back the fishery that it used to be. Why are we here? Why is this meeting here? Do you normally have this meeting about the Cowlitz and the Cowlitz hatcheries? I noticed that there's another one coming up. The reason we're here is the driving issue of the 550,000 lost fish. The fishing community has many concerns, years of concerns, about lost fish and pathways and loss of economic lost fishing opportunities and loss of economic opportunity within the region, within the river. One of the things I want to say about this presentation and what you just heard, and I had a discussion yesterday with an attorney that's working on things, he says it needs to pass the laugh test. There's a lot of laughing going on down in the community about the discussion of what happened to these 550,000 fish. It's not believable to them, and that is not, you know, that's what's happening. I talked to a number of members. They just, you know, the excuses that are given have not been acceptable to them. The other thing is that the community, the fishing community, is now at a point that they're moving past the process of addressing these issues at the local arena. That they're currently moving to meet with state senators and with legislation. There's a hearing at the Natural Resources Committee that we're attending this Thursday. We've already met with senators. The issue really is about the perception of the community of mistruths and deceptions that have come along over the years. That this is just the current driving issue, but this has been coming on for a number of years. I guess I could get in to how the hatcheries have been being. So I look at a number of different things, you know, and I look at the HSRG and I've looked at a number of what are the real issues here, what's going on with the hatchery, how does it compare to others. I did some math here, just on the fall shook runs alone, and that the hatchery and their escapement for the last 5 years appears to be at a 0.002% adult returns, 2 to 4% returns over the last 5 years. I listened to Northwest Power Council meeting with Dr. Fast of the Yakima Nation. He says that they're achieving 5% returns on their hatcheries. It's been tough to find what is the goal here. What should be an acceptable standard? Is it 1%? Is it 0.5%? The fall Chinook returns on the Cowlitz hatchery have been 0.002 to 0.004 over the last 5 or 6 years.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
And Dale Scott, please, and Steve.
So I'm one of the unorganized groups that Cindy was referring to. I'm just a simple fisherman. I've been fishing in the state for 35 years, since I was a teenager. I've raised 2 children who have fished with me since they were old enough to hold a fishing rod. From what I'm seeing less opportunities out there. I'm seeing opportunities go away. I'm seeing less fish returning. I'm seeing less vehicles in that Blue Creek parking lot. Okay. Normally, in December and January, February, that parking lot's full. This year, some of my friends have posted pictures on Facebook where there's not one car in that parking lot. There's businesses in the area, they're losing out on money. Personally, I live in Tacoma, but I make that trip down there at least 2 or 3 times a month. I don't get fuel in Tacoma, okay? Those gas stations have plenty of business. I wait to fuel my vehicle up down by the Cowlitz River because I know those gas station people down there are struggling on Highway 12. There's 3 or 4 gas stations down there, and who knows, in the next couple of years, they might just be down to 1. So the money is not being distributed down that way because of the lack of fish. So everybody during all this time, because the A-run fish was done away with for whatever reason, everybody's been anticipating this B-run fish showing up, okay? So all the guides and all the local sportsmen have been waiting for this month, March and April, for these fish to show up. I was on the Cowlitz on Tuesday, which should be prime time for this B-run to show up, and it was a sad case. We hooked 1 fish. That's what I've been waiting for 3 months for. Prime time to see my boat with 5 people on it catch 1 fish. That should not be how it should be. especially with all the buildup that me and all my fellow fishermen have gotten over the last couple of months waiting for this time, March and April. Now, am I confident that it's going to happen? You know, I'm not very confident right now. And, you know, I have to try to look for somewhere else to fish, which, you know, that's not really what I want to do. I'd rather keep going to the place that I've always gone to, that I brought my children. I have two grandchildren, and I'm worried that they're not going to get the opportunity to enjoy it like I did or their parents did. So please, let's turn this thing around.
Thank you, Steve. Randy LaDuke, please, and Dale.
Good morning. My name's Dale Scott. I'm president of CCA Washington and a former member of the Cowlitz River Advisory Group. I want to thank the commission members for bringing this issue of the Cowlitz River smolt loss forward. In 2013, there was 104% release of summer steelhead smolt. 2014, 95% release. 2015, 74% release. 2016, 28% release. And 2017 is unknown. And that's because predation is still happening. And we've got reliable people that keep an eye on what's going on there. And for an example, Tuesday morning, there were 75 to 100 cormorants that landed on the pond and were actively feeding for 30 minutes before the hazer showed up. So it's still continuing. The losses are significant and are tremendous economic loss to Lewis and Cowlitz counties and the state of Washington. According to a 2008 study by Scott and Gill, assessment of Washington State's steelhead population and programs, the estimated recreational value of each harvested fish is approximately $1,000. So if you take 70% smolt loss, could result in the reduction of 10,500 harvestable fish, which has a potential loss of $5 to $10 million in economic value. And according to the previous briefing by WDFW staff, favorable ocean conditions could still produce an average adult run, which is true. Imagine what the return could be if we had that 72% lost smolt that had been released. So what will Tacoma Power do to mitigate the losses that have occurred and are still occurring? Another issue that really frustrates the recreational fisher people on the Cowlitz is this. FERC's letter dated February 1st, 2017 states, according to FHMP filed with the Federal Energy Commission, you, Tacoma Power, are required to release approximately 650,000 summer steelhead. In response, Tacoma Power's letter on February 28, 2017, they stated they contracted with WDFW to raise and release up to 650,000 summer steelhead. FERC's letter didn't say 28% release is okay. There is no accountability for releases that are under the required amount, and this needs to change. Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. And Mark Youngblood, please. And Randy.
Good morning, everyone. I am Randy LaDuke. I'm a member of the ad hoc committee. I've sat through many of those meetings, and I only have 3 minutes to talk. Otherwise, I'd love to dispute that whole presentation, because that's the sunny side of it, but the real side of it is what we live in. We look at 2015, there was a 20% loss. When I went up and we were talking about the reason, it was a hole in the pond on the number two fish pond, and there was a hole. I just looked at, if you looked at the picture up there, it's probably 100 yards to the river and, you know, close to the same to the creek. So if there's a hole in the pond and the fish are apparently disappearing through it, where did they go? So I think the fish, the birds have been causing a little bit of a grief to start with, so we knew there's a problem coming. Then the next year we go through, and now we're down, we lost 72%, and we've identified it. But as everything goes, they said that there was a problem with disease turning the eggs out to start to raise them up. And next, then they had the ducks inside the ponds. And when I visited the ponds in January, the ducks are in there. They said they're so fat they can't get back out because they've been eating all the food. But if we knew there was a problem with the ducks eating the food, and that's supposed to be causing the fish to not be able to get to weight and strength, we might have been able to figure it out that if we increased the feed out there that we could feed the ducks and feed the fish. So then there's a problem with the herons. The herons walking around the shores. When I was out visiting the plant, there was about 40 herons sitting up in the trees waiting for it to get dark when the hazing quit so they could fly down and walk around the edges and eat. And then there's the mergansers and the coumarins and stuff. If the people during the hazing time had to use a restroom or something like that, as soon as they drove the truck off the site, the birds were there and stuff. So, you know, the problems have been going on, and they've known there was a problem, but nothing has been going on. And I'm sure that these people in charge of the hatcheries, you know, they're college educated, most of them. They're not naive people, and they should know what's going on and do a little reacting before they turn the fish loose. After you turn the fish loose, it's kind of hard to keep the cows from getting out of the barn if you shut the door after they're already out. So we've gone through all of these issues. And we sat through the our ad hoc meetings and stuff, and when they came out, it acted like they were surprised when they got the news. And unfortunately, and stuff, with all of these hatchery personnel working there, there shouldn't have been a surprise. It should have been a known what was coming. And there's all the strategies have been identified, but only the one implemented and stuff. And everything else is just talk. And I think it's time that the talk ends and the action starts. That's all I've got to say.
Thank you, Randy. And Kevin Turner, please. And Mark.
I am Mark Youngblood. I'm a full-time fishing guide in Washington, saltwater charter boat operator. The CCA gentleman was talking about the birds on Tuesday. I was physically at Blue Creek, been there for many days. Tuesday, I was having some boat work done locally, so I spent the day in Blue Creek parking lot in my camper. The bird hazer was out there before daylight because it woke me and the dog up. He was doing his job. About 9 o'clock, I was watching TV, and I'm not exaggerating when I say I was looking out the window and the sky turned totally black. It was like a horror movie. It was just nothing but cormorants, and they were flying about 10 feet over the bird pens, and I'm parked right next to them. I looked out the back door. They flew over. If the hatchery building's to my right, it would be halfway down. On the back side, I watched them just diving. I mean, and I'm eye level with the pens. All I can see is whitewater, and they're just having a big time. And I understand most people say, oh, it was probably 2 or 3 minutes. It was a solid 20 to 30 minutes I stood in the back door watching, and the birds were just, they were having a big time. The hazing truck finally come racing down through there, scared them off. But if you go down there right now and look in the trees on the far side of Blue Creek boat launch, they're totally covered with cormorants and other birds. They're just waiting. And as soon as the hazing truck leaves, they go right over and go right back in the pens and start eating. So if they're doing that once, twice a day, how many fish are we losing each week? The other thing right now, like the previous gentleman was talking about, the fish run should be, it should be phenomenal fishing on the cowlitz right now. The steelhead, the B run should be in full swing. I'm down there fishing. I can fish. This time last year, if I had 4 to 6 rods in the boat, I'm hooking 10 to 15 fish a day, every day solid, past March 4th. Recently, I'm doing good with 4 to 6 rods to hook 3 to 4 fish a day. And I'm a pretty good fisherman. The fish are not there. What I'm not seeing, and the other guides and other fishermen, are what we call the two salts. The smaller 8 to 10 pound hatchery brats are not in the river. I didn't catch the first one until this week. Everything's been 3 salt, the larger fish. I was looking at the escapement things last night when I got home. Just briefly, in 2015, by March 16th, hatchery had taken in 1,064 winter run steelhead. 2016, by the same date, 965. 2017, as of 3/13, we've taken in 184 fish. It's a big difference. Where are the fish at? The thing earlier where they're showing, you know, all the pictures of Blue Creek and the full parking lots, that's the past. The Cowlitz used to be the gem of the Southwest. You can keep a river open 365 days a year and put a 10-fish limit on it. That does not mean there's fish in there to be caught 365 days a year. It's just a wise tale. There are some good times, and there'll be people down there fishing. But from November through January, it's a parking lot down there, I mean, a ghost town, because there's no A-run fish. The stores are hurting, just like the other people have testified. Just because we have a 3-fish limit, I'd challenge anybody to go down there and try to catch 3 fish. It's not going to happen. The fishing is just not there anymore. And I'd like to know why, because it's pretty sad. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I have a question for Joe or Jim. I know firsthand certain geographic areas in the Upper Great Lakes where cormorants came in that they weren't there before. And the rafts of cormorants would go into the thousands. You could see them. And it did impact heavily into the perch, which is a fish in the Great Lakes, the perch population, and also other, there was undertaken about 10 years ago a lethal removal, and those rafts now aren't there. I mean, you see two or three birds flying around, but is there lethal removal in Washington of cormorants?
Mr. Chairman, yes,
there is. Ron or one of the fish guys could tell you more, but and it's been done on the Columbia pretty extensively lately, but in this particular area, we haven't done lethal control very extensively. I think there has been some lethal control hatchery, but...
Yeah. And I don't go into a deep dive on it right now. It's a long day. Shallow dive. And another thing, as a waterfowl biologist in a former life, ducks don't eat smolt. Mergansers do, but, you know, cormorants do. But so I don't know. I'd like to just find out more about the lethal removal, because it was very effective in the Upper Great Lakes and North Islands around northern Lake Huron, because I saw that firsthand. There were a number of people that were paid. And again, it's a federal issue. I understand all that, but they were paid, and they shot all day long. no clapping. The first day might have been fun. I think the second day would have been a pain, literally. So, okay, that was.
You could volunteer for the shooting.
No, for day one. Off in New Brunswick too. I knew they do. They call them blackjacks up there in the Maritimes. Same issue. It keeps haunting me periodically. Kevin, you bring up the end of this one.
I'm recently relocated here. Came here with the thought of really great steelhead fishing. Went down to the Cowlitz, been learning. Got hit with all this stuff that we've been talking about today. So I really don't know a whole lot about A-run, B-run fish, what the hatchery does. But I keep hearing about this thing that the cause is bird predation. I don't think it takes an engineer to take care of bird predation. And I see the hatchery personnel in Tacoma saying, oh, it's going to cost $500,000 to get this infrastructure and these nets in. We really can't do anything, which addresses the fact that it takes forever to get something done. Hire a couple people to go float around in a rowboat out there and make sure that it doesn't happen. That's something that can happen immediately. Doesn't have to be $500,000 down the road. You can take care of the bird predation immediately with people. It doesn't take, you know, rocket science. Make sure someone's out there 24/7 floating around. 5-acre pond is not very big. So I just think that the bird predation excuse is an excuse and could be dealt with, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. And that brings an end to the college.